This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, you're listening to The Morning Run with Lynn Mark, Roshan Kanisan, and, well, no, there's no and, really.
If you had said a name there, Lynn, I would have freaked out.
Well, what to do? I'm so used to having like either Noel or Shaoning in the studio as well. But it's just the two of us today. How are you doing, Roshan?
Wow, so disappointed. I'm so sorry to bore you this morning, Lynn.
I'm not disappointed. It's just a fact of life.
I'm doing well. It's actually a really cold morning. It's been a few cold days. It's been very rainy. You know, it's one of those days where you want to sleep in and not wake up at 4 in the morning.
It's cold, isn't it?
Yeah, it's so cold. Other than that, I can't complain about much. When we take a look around the world, we've got to take a look at some not great news occasionally. But today, we're talking about whether, I think the IEA, which is the International Energy Association, is talking about how we're going to get towards net zero carbon emissions by 2050. And one of the things they've said here is basically, guys, we got to stop new oil fields and things like that. So I don't know how that's going to turn out for a lot of the big oil majors around the world, or countries like Malaysia, where a big part of our economy mm-hmm. comes from oil. But also talking about more COVID-19 updates, including the second doses over in the US and the increased authorizations for vaccines and vaccines being sent abroad from the US. A lot of these big countries did buy up more than they needed. And out of the goodness of their heart now that they don't need it, they're giving it to everyone else.
Out of the goodness of their hearts,
yes,
indeed.
I'm sure.
And then, of course, at about 6:45, we're going to be taking a look at our own local papers and portals. A quick cursory glance this morning tells me that lockdowns feature on at least some of the papers. The discussion of whether or not we should just lock down the economy fully, go back to the original MCO 1.0. That's the discussion that's happening in the local news at the moment. But in the meantime, you know, a little bit closer to home, we are going to be having a couple of other slightly lighter conversations about how to identify top employees.
Fantastic. That's a riveting discussion, Lynn. I'm looking forward to learning how we can make data-driven decisions. I mean, it's important to make data-driven decisions even when you think about things like a lockdown. So let's see what kind of examples we can learn.
I can't tell whether you're being sarcastic or not.
Neither can I actually at this point. But anyway, this is an article from the Harvard Business Review. It should be very data-driven itself, so it should be interesting to see.
And if you want to weigh in, remember you can WhatsApp us. The number is 01878988899, or you can tweet us at BFM Radio. Up next, though, we're asking whether you feel overwhelmed by too many streaming site choices. Let us know. We're going to be talking about that in just a few minutes. BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9. That was The Way by Fastball. I feel like I just made, you know, half of a Mandalorian reference there. You're listening to The Morning Run with Lynn and Roshan. It is 6:07 in the morning.
And this is The Way.
And this is The Way. We're going to be proceeding for the next hour or so. We're going to be looking at some interesting stories, you know, the lighter side of serious business. And first on our list, you know, speaking actually of shows like The Mandalorian, streaming services is our first subject
hot
today.
Topic.
It is indeed, because, you know, here we are getting Disney Hotstar on the 1st of June. So in about 12 days.
Yep, 12 days. Not like I'm counting or anything, but yes.
I am, because it's going to be a birthday present
for
to
sure.
myself.
yes, brilliant. You know, this is really, really interesting, right, Lynn? And exciting, because we've heard the recent news around WarnerMedia and Discovery having a bit of a merger there. Basically, mm-hmm. AT&T, after buying Time Warner 2 or 3 years back, is now going to essentially spin it off, merge it with Discovery, and have it listed on its own. I think one of the leading names out there is that it'll be called Warner Discovery, according to some sources quoted by CNBC. So that'll be interesting. We've also got some rumors that Amazon could be looking to buy Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer, MGM. If you're not sure what that name is, well, the one of the oldest Hollywood studios, and they own the James Bond franchise. The Roaring Lion, yes. But more importantly, James Bond. They own the James Bond franchise. This is going to be very interesting, because we've seen this consolidation incoming, right? Because look at this Fast Company article we're looking at, Lynn. Some of the stats here are quite crazy, right? There's so much fragmentation going on. 68% of Americans use their smart TVs, 50% rely on connected devices. They have maybe five services on average when we come to subscription services. And then sometimes, you know, not all of these devices can be used on one platform, so you've got to get other devices. It's getting confusing on the consumer side.
Yes, indeed it is. And so this Fast Company article is looking at a survey that was conducted by Verizon Media and Publicis Media. So looking at the trend of cord cutting, cord stacking, and it suggested that about half of connected device users were overwhelmed by the sheer volume of streaming services available. I feel like this is a little bit of a good problem to have, at least from our perspective, where we don't have, we've only really had Netflix and a couple of other local ones.
Also, think about it, subscription services, not necessarily just the video ones, right? Think about it. The YouTube Premium has become very popular. You've got Spotify. You've got all sorts of other things going on. You've got cloud subscriptions. But when we talk about consumption, that's one of the things, right? And it seems like we are heading towards, you know, there was a liberalization of media, getting your different subscriptions instead of having everything bundled under one package like Astro used to do. We seem to be heading towards the bundling situation again, especially in different countries, because Astro, when Disney Plus Hotstar does come to the country, it will also be available as part of the bundling services in Astro, but not just Disney Plus, right? Because Astro has already been working with other OTTs for a while. It's got four under its belt right now. It's got Astro Go, of course, but it's also got iQIYI, which is a Chinese-based media company. It's also got HBO Go, and now they've got Disney Hotstar. I wonder who else they will be. Who else they can tap on to kind of bundle it together, because I think some analysts are looking at this as a way for them to kind of offset the potential erosion they're seeing in their subscription base. And it could work, right? Because end of the day, if you're adding $5 here for Disney, which is like a 50% off the actual purchase price if you got it independently, that could be a good stimulus to get it through Astro, right? Instead of getting it independently. So this is something to kind of watch how the landscape changes, but more importantly, I'm watching how the consolidation is happening across the world, because even in this Warner Media Discovery tie-up, some sources are already quoting that it's being structured in a way that would allow for a future sale, right? So they're structuring it to maybe sell it off later on or buy other media companies, because the other two studios out there, MGM is one, but Universal is still out there, and so is Sony. I wonder if they will get bought up in time as well.
It's an interesting setup, interesting kind of situation that we're seeing, right? Because the prevalence of the internet and fast internet basically meant that it shifted the power dynamic away from the large traditional media conglomerates that prior to this monopolized content development and the content that we were able to consume. But now we're seeing these two kind of sides of the coin starting to merge. So I'm going to be very interested to see kind of what other developments we have in this space, but just on a more kind of personal basis, right? We knew even before this that in the US where Netflix, you know, Disney Plus, Hulu, where they do have also a number of very large streaming platforms, that the average number of streaming platforms that someone was subscribed to they kind of had an average of two.
It's like two and a half, something like that,
right? So now that we are also seeing more streaming services kind of becoming available here in Malaysia, I'm wondering what that number would look like for us. Because at least for me, and I have Netflix, and I'm definitely going to be, trying out Disney Hotstar for at least a short while. I don't have any of the other Astro streaming platforms.
So I have, as a family, right? So a lot of these things have the family packages. So
I do have Spotify Premium.
There we go. So my family has Apple Plus, Apple TV Plus. We've got Prime, YouTube Premium, Netflix, Spotify.
You're single-handedly skewing the average in the studio.
But the thing is, when you do it as a family, if you live in the same household, it does average down the price for all these different content providers. And the thing is, it happened over the last year when everyone's at home, right? It's like, oh, we've watched everything on Netflix. What's next? Prime's got a lot of the Tom Clancy stuff, which is quite spy thriller-ish. They're all looking to create IP for themselves, essentially, right? So when you're looking at this, some of the potential suitors for this future possible Warner Discovery future sale off could be Amazon or Apple, who are also looking for those big franchises to have, right? Because Warner Media has got the DC Universe and Lord of the Rings and Harry Potter. Disney don't even have to. I mean, you've got Marvel, Star Wars, all these massive franchises there. The tech companies don't have that just yet. They're trying to create their own IP. I wonder whether it's just easier to buy something. So could you imagine Apple producing James Bond movies in the future, or having it on Apple TV Plus, or creating a series? These are the kind of permutations we could see going forward.
But let us know what you think about this. Do you think that there are too many streaming services now available? Let us know. You can WhatsApp us 0187898899, or you can tweet us at BFM Radio. We are heading into some messages and then looking at data-driven approaches to retaining employees. So stay tuned to BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, you're listening to The Morning Run with Lynn Mark and Roshan Kanison. That song was the Jackson 5 with I Want You Back. And if you're, you know, if you're an employer in a position where you're saying, I want you back to your top to your top performing employees, well, this article is maybe for you. We're looking at something from the Harvard Business Review that is talking about how you can use data to identify and retain top employees.
Ladies and gentlemen, and a round of applause to Denmark for that beautiful transition. But really, you're listening to the lyrics of I Want You Back and you're like, this could totally apply. This is very interesting, and it's become one of my favorite sites to visit. One, the aesthetic is great because it's white on black on white, which is very clean to read, but also it's very intelligent, I guess, in a way. You would expect it of the Harvard Business Review, of course.
I think Philip and Shannon call it atas.
Yes, that's the word, atas. Yeah. But essentially, they're talking about one side of the coin here, right? The war for talent. Yes, there are many parts of the world where we're talking about underemployment, unemployment levels going up. But there is also a side or a corner where you're seeing a war for talent that has been, this is a term that's been bandied about since 1997 when it was coined by McKinsey and Company, right? Or apparently reported coined by a McKinsey and Company back then. And what we're seeing is that no matter what, there will always be skill sets in demand. And that's where you're going to see the war for talent. Mm-hmm. And in there, it's a competitive field because the power skews towards one side.
It's been made the landscape of that war has changed with COVID-19 in the picture. Because prior to this, right, you know, a style of management was what they call management by walking around. That doesn't really work anymore when a majority of your workforce is working from home. But you can actually utilize that, right? Because you're all connected over the internet. You all have to use methods of communication, like, for example, Slack or Discord or, you know, even WhatsApp. Which means that things like informal networks of communication and the sharing of knowledge is a lot more easily quantifiable now.
Mm-hmm. And when we take a look at some of the things they suggest here, right, especially as things are changing, work is becoming more remote, the first thing that they've noted here is, before looking elsewhere, search within. While building, basically look towards building rather than buying, right? And this is not a new concept, but, you know, just a few minutes ago, we were talking about media companies buying each other for growth and searching for talent. And more importantly, they're searching for content. Within a company, there are some of the surveys that they've cited here that internal hires on average receive higher performance reviews and cost less than external counterparts. But 60% of hiring managers suggest internal recruiting could be improved by identifying skills in existing employees. And I think that's the gap, right? Internally, you don't have people preparing their CVs perpetually for internal job hires, or maybe the system, the HR. A lot of times, HR systems do seem a bit laggy, or maybe not as fluid as they should be. A lot of times, even within when you're applying for jobs externally, you're not even sure whether the HR manager has read your CV, because whether they're using the system right or whatever. So this is interesting. How do you create an internal system before you hire out? And this is, I guess, what you're seeing with a lot of countries as well, right? Oh, you got to hire internally within the nation first before you start looking elsewhere. So you create a database, a pool for you to kind of look into.
I think one step would be to just address whether or not within your company you kind of have a bit of FOMO when it comes to when it comes to receiving applications from external employees, because this is something that I've also been told, right? You know, if you're an internal internal potential hire looking to either make a vertical move or even a lateral move, sometimes you're not prioritized because you're already in the company, so you know it's like they view you as a bit more of a sure thing as compared to an external talent. So that's one thing that you need to, that companies do need to be aware of if they are looking to follow this advice, and I think turn a little bit inwards first before also looking out.
Correct. But how do you do it on a more analytical analytical basis, right? What kind of data points are you going to reach out to? Because we end the day, we are talking about data-driven decisions here. Thing is, we've got so many breadcrumbs today, electronic breadcrumbs, whether it's emails or group messages or if you use like proper work software like Slack and things like that, these are all things that you can track, right? Or even just people analytics, which is a term basically where you survey employees, but also where you look through email analysis and basically who's communicating with who through emails, messages, things like that. You can see who works with which departments, things like this may be only suitable maybe for bigger companies, but on a smaller scale, you can start looking at building your own systems to make these decisions, because you have to be able to quantify these kind of skill sets. And yes, we don't want to over-quantify everything, right? It shouldn't be, quantifiability shouldn't be the holy grail here, but it needs to be part of the process, because only what gets measured gets managed. Yes, I roll, Lynn, but it's true.
You called me out there.
Yeah, but you need qualitative and quantitative data and bring them together. The qualitative, well, that's the HR manager or your team leads, but you also need tangible data, like, oh, okay, these are the things I've done, these are the focus areas I've been working on, this is why I'm suitable for this job. And it has to also come top down, right? It can't be just the internal employee saying, oh, this opening is there, I'm going to apply for it. But of course, this is all easier said than done. And I think maybe this is why HR managers look externally still, because it might be easier to bring in an external force, an external employee to fill in the gap, as opposed to, because when you hire internally, there are also other vacuums that could be let in, that you could leave in other teams that could cause other issues later on.
Yeah, so this is an interesting subject, particularly in this day and age where even prior to this, we knew that technology was changing the face of how many facets of companies operated, and HR is certainly one of them. But so let us know what you think about this. You know, you can WhatsApp us at 01878988899, or you can tweet us at BFM Radio. We're heading into the 6:30 news now and then taking a look at some international stories. But first, some music. Here is I Need a Dollar by Allo Black, BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, that was Ready to Start by Arcade Fire. And if you're ready to start your day, you're doing it the right way with us here on The Morning Run. So you're with Lynn Mark and Roshan Kanison. It is 6:40 in the morning, Wednesday, the 19th of May. And we are turning our attention to what's been happening on the international stage. And really, there are a lot of things happening. And if you open up the homepage of the BBC News, it really looks like the world is catching fire. But then I guess that's nothing new when it comes to the news cycle, really. What are some interesting stories that have caught your eye, Roshan?
Well, we got to start with, I guess, an update of what's happening over in Israel and Palestine. I've got an Al Jazeera article open here. They've got basically a live feed going on that was updated about half an hour ago. And the story here goes that basically, even as there are dozens of air raids continuing to hit Gaza on Tuesday, as Joe Biden expressed support for a ceasefire between Israel and Hamas in a phone call with Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. This is apparently his third phone call with the Prime Minister since the violence flared up on May 10th, and once again expressing support for a ceasefire. But the U.S. president stopped short of demanding an end to the violence at this point. EU foreign policy chief Joseph Borrell called for an implementation of a ceasefire following a video conference of EU foreign ministers, adding that the call was backed by a bloc of member states, except for Hungary. Meanwhile, in the occupied West Bank, Israeli forces killed four Palestinian protesters during a demonstration. These are just some of the most current updates. But also, we had Israeli closing off the border to Gaza again.
So they'd opened that crossing, the Kerem Shalom crossing into Gaza to allow aid into the area. So the UN welcomed the decision, but also urged Israel to open up the main Erez crossing so that humanitarian workers, supplies could all get access to the affected areas. But as the convoy of aid lorries was entering Gaza, Palestinian militants fired mortars at the area. So Israel has promptly shut the crossing again. Two Thai nationals working on a farm were killed. So this is definitely something that we are watching. I think the world is watching very closely. The death toll stands at about 250 people on both sides, but primarily, of course, on the Palestinian side, an estimated 215 people have been 215 people, including almost 100 women and children, have been killed in Gaza so far, according to its Hamas-controlled health ministry. In Israel, 12 people, including 2 children, have been killed.
Yeah, and about 2 hours ago, according to the live report here, France pushed the UN Security Council for a resolution. France presidency has essentially calling, asking them to essentially come down to stop. How do we stop the fighting here? Overall, the three countries here in a statement between talks between President Emmanuel Macron, Egyptian President Abdel Fattah al-Sisi, and Jordan's King Abdullah, basically coming to... yes, one, the shooting must stop. The time has come for a ceasefire and the UN Security Council must take up the subject. And we have also called for a vote on the resolution on the subject, although how far a vote will go is anyone's guess, really.
And we did have a conversation about this with Dr. Liana Kayali of the Australian National University yesterday. So you can check out that podcast on the BFM app or on Spotify. Right now, though, also just taking a look at the Straits Times has an article about how several countries are delaying a second COVID-19 vaccine dose. So the recommendation for this second dose varies very widely amongst vaccines. So from as early as 21 days to up to 12 weeks apart. So in January, the UK was among the first to take what was considered at that time a bit of an unusual step to delay the second dose of a vaccine by up to 12 weeks. So this was to prioritise first jabs to as many people as possible. But following on those heels, Denmark in April also approved a delay of up to 6 weeks between the first and second shots of its Pfizer and Moderna vaccines.
Yeah, so I guess this is the kind of strategy, right? Do you go wide or do you go deep on this on the topic here? So I think the UK did catch a lot of flack when it first did this, but this strategy seems to be catching on. Whereas in Malaysia, we planned out the two doses, right? Even the first rollout of Pfizer, the Pfizer vaccines for the frontliners was planned to have that with the two doses in mind. Even the AstraZeneca rollout last week was planned with the two doses in mind. Yeah, we'll have to see how this plays out because both of them have a rationale, right? Like, if we're going to do this, let's do it right. And then the other one is, let's get this as far wide as possible mm-hmm. to kind of average down the impacts to everyone, even if it's not the full efficacy.
Yes. So there's it's certainly, they're just different approaches, really, but it's all heading towards a common goal, which is to get as many people vaccinated as possible in order to achieve herd immunity. So this, and the fact that some countries are also sending their excess vaccine doses to other countries around the world, is something that we're going to be watching quite closely. But right now, heading into some messages and then bringing you what's in our local papers and portals. So stay tuned. BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, that was Erase Rewind by The Cardigans. And you're listening to The Morning Run with Lynn and Roshan. It is 6:50 in the morning, Wednesday the 19th of May. And right now we are looking at our local papers as well as some portals to see what's happening on the front pages. I have the NST in front of me and their headline here is, in quotes, just lockdown. So they spoke to economists, several experts who are backing full lockdowns in Selangor, so complete lockdown similar to what we had in MCO 1.0, saying that it's really the only option in order to curb the virus, even if it's only for 2 weeks.
And actually, what seems to be like a reply, but I can't confirm or deny that, the Malaysian Reserve over here has the sidebar, Tengku Zafrul, no total lockdown to prevent unemployment. And the article goes, no other country in the world has completely shut down their economies in the face of the second and third waves of COVID-19, according to Finance Minister Tengku Dato' Sri Zafrul. Afrul Tengku Abdul Aziz. Instead, other countries are only tightening their SOPs and restricting social activities instead. And I guess this is also Malaysia's approach, as he's noting here, to prevent unemployment and a harder hit on vulnerable groups. Again, the same argument, right? Lives over livelihoods. But he's right in the sense that, you know, can we really afford a total lockdown?
Yes, that is indeed the question. And, you know, it's not necessarily an option to choose, say, lives over livelihoods for particularly poorer segments of society, where, you know, if you're living hand to mouth, losing your livelihood means putting your life on the line. But the thing that I always take away whenever the government comes out to say, you know, oh, no lockdowns, is that, well, they said that there was not going to be a lockdown 2 months ago, and then now we're in MCO 3.0 again. So
yeah,
never is the theme.
True. Fluidity and all things, nothing is constant. I mean, except death and taxes, I guess. Well, I guess that depends who you ask when it comes to taxes. When we take a look at the situation, though, Lynn, another thing that's been really on the headline is the state versus federal government in terms of vaccine procurement. That's the main headline here on the Malaysian Reserve. Vaccine fulfilled federal target before states, says Khairi. And the Selangor government's move to allow companies to buy vaccines for their workforce to curb infections at the biggest source has hit a bottleneck because it competes with the federal government's own procurement process. Minister of Science, Technology and Innovation Khairi Jamaluddin said the efforts from Selangor here to procure vaccines for its own corporation would have to be in line with the national COVID-19 immunization program. And we're starting to see a few headlines about this, right, in terms of a bit of friction. I think Guaning also made not a statement, but what seemed like a little bit of a complaint, essentially, because apparently Penang was offered free vaccinations, but Putrajaya has blocked it, and Guaning was not happy about that and encouraged the chief minister of Penang to go ahead and do it and suffer the consequences later, if any, right? Basically, which is, again, not great. I don't think this plays out very well. But you know, there are some inconsistencies, right? Like Selangor was going ahead with it. Sarawak also has some permissions there. So why isn't Penang allowed to do it? Again, I guess if you just come out with transparency and what is the system here at play, right? Because it is a complex dynamic between federal and state governments. But when you have these discrepancies, that's when, you know, things like trust deficits come up and people aren't sure why this is done and why this isn't done and all of that. So yeah, it would be good if there is yes, we understand the need to prioritize a streamlined way instead of having competing systems, but why one or the other? Why some states and why not the others? That would be a great explanation.
Yes, to their credit, I don't think the government is being deliberately opaque when it comes to discussing, you know, why certain states have been given the green light, or why certain states are announcing that employers can purchase vaccines for employees. I think it's more of a kind of a general communication confusion, and the fact that everyone is snapping up any little piece of information that comes out, and then it blows up, right? Because everyone is focused on COVID-19 and the vaccine rollout right now. You know, this is something that is also covered in the NST on page 6. The explanation given here is that from the Minister Khairi Jamaluddin said that, you know, he said here that Selangor is trying to buy vaccines from the same pharmaceutical company as the National Immunization Program, which is why, you know, there is this kind of back and forth over who gets it first, because the priority should go to the national programs. If Selangor was perhaps sourcing their vaccines from elsewhere, then that might be a different conversation.
Correct, and this is where I understand where the federal government's coming from, right? Because if you start having multiple sources, as it is, it's a competition on a national stage to buy vaccines.
International stage
to buy vaccines. So what more when you start competing between state and federal authorities? It's just confusing. Maybe the federal government can work with corporations, right? Like talk to the big corporations who have maybe the they have tens of thousands of employees or thousands of employees that they can have the logistic capacity to organize better their own vaccination programs. Mm-hmm. Maybe that's one way you can do it, because I think that's how Indonesia is doing it as well. But for states to come in as well and start confusing the process, unless you're not going to buy from the big four vaccine makers right now, which is what, Pfizer, AstraZeneca, Sinovac, I think Moderna, and you've also got Johnson & Johnson somewhere there. Who are you going to buy from if not them? right? Where are you going to get your vaccines from? So it's just an unnecessary process, another additional step for a population of 30 million people. You know, if the US could coordinate their federal government procurement, I don't see why we can't coordinate this more streamlined.
Yeah, so this is teething problems, certainly. I mean, there is no real best practice that the government has to follow at this point. We're just trying our best to get as many people vaccinated as possible. So definitely, of course, a developing story. Right now, though, heading into the 7 o'clock news bulletin, and then, of course, more business news and analysis. But first, here is It's My Life by The Animals, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.